Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives, available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.podbean.com. Look on the right-hand column and our entire catalog is easily accessible by month and year. Go hear great conversations with artists like Sweet Spirit, Zeely, The Wind and the Wave, Quiet Company, and literally hundreds more. That's howdidigethere.podbean.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Hope you guys all had a great weekend. I have a great show for you guys today. Nick Diaz from the band Buenos Diaz is here today. They just released a brand new album called Buenos Diaz, self-titled album, produced by Daniel McNeil, who worked with White Denim as well. And they've been playing a lot of shows. And Nick just took off on tour with Alejandro Escovedo for the month of June. And he finishes up an East Coast tour with him next week, July 1st. And then he comes back and starts playing shows again with his band, Buenos Diaz. So go to buenosdiazmusic.com, find out when they're coming to a town near you. I have a fantastic conversation with Nick. He's a great songwriter, great guitar player, really cool dude. We had a great time. He's lived all over the place, New York, New Orleans, San Francisco, Houston, and now Austin. So yeah, great conversation with Nick Diaz coming up in just a minute. First, let me tell you what's going on with me. I had a good weekend. Had a lot of work going on. Played with Skyrocket Thursday night at 310 here for a private thing. That place is so fun to play, man. It's such a nice room. If you live in Austin, get out to 310 ACL Live. Great shows go on there. Got Matthew Sweet coming up this month, and The Fix is coming up. I saw them there last year. Great show. Great room. Awesome LED wall behind the band. And we have all those, you know, projections now. And so to have them not on projections, but to have them come out off of a screen is awesome looking. So that party was good. Then Friday, got up, went to Houston. We played a show there at Fitzgerald's. Great show. Great show, man. We have some really great shows in Houston. And Fitzgerald's been playing there for so long that it's really fun to get back on that stage to a packed room and just play a show where everyone's in it together. You know, everyone was in it from the get-go. You know, people were a little bit tense before the show. We were a little bit tired from the night before. When we got on that stage, man, we came alive. Thank you, crowd in Houston. You're fantastic. Same thing happened when we came back the next day to Austin. We came back and played on Saturday at Cedar Street Courtyard. Always a good time, a place that we kind of started out playing and kind of earned our, you know, put our time in on that stage. So that was nice. Great crowd there. Very into it. Very, two nights of just really intense crowds makes for a really, really exhausting Sunday, but really a gratifying show. So yes, they were great. They were a great time. Sunday, I went to brunch with some friends, had a really nice time, and then back on the grind this week with some podcasts and stuff, not playing with Skyrocket this weekend, but next week we're doing July 4th at the new stadium in Pflugerville. You can go to skyrockettheband.com and our tour dates. If you don't have 4th of July plans, come on out. We're playing with the Blue Bonnets, Skyrocket, fireworks show, Mayor of Pflugerville. That sounds like a guy in a Dr. Seuss story. The mayor of Pflugerville and all the little Pflugs were there. Anyway, yeah, I got that going on. Of course, we're going to Cleveland next weekend, the weekend after, first weekend of July. So it should be a good time. I love Cleveland. All right, let's get to this conversation with my pal Nick Diaz from the band Buenos Diaz. Of course, he has been on tour all of June with the great Alejandro Escovedo. We have a great conversation about how he ended up in that gig, how he moved around, growing up in Houston, getting exposed to the blues, getting exposed to the 13th floor elevators, learning about new wave music and all those things that combine to make the music of Buenos Diaz. Go to buenosdiazmusic.com, pick up their album, Buenos Diaz, just came out. Nick's a great guy. We have a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And here it is. Without further ado, my pal Nick Diaz from the band Buenos Diaz. Let's get down.
Yeah. that name rings a bell, but I don't know them personally.
You and her can do this thing where you can do a sort of like an outline, and then you know who it is, like ZZ Top with their beards and stuff.
Right, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
I don't think she meant to do it. Did you mean to do it?
No, that came from an old friend was just doodling at night, and she drew it.
Oh.
And so I have, like, the original artwork for that, actually, like, the actual drawing. And then I just was like, man, this is great. I should use this. And she was cool with it, so.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, so it came together really good. And then I just had, like, a graphic designer laid out the
writing.
Text underneath it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that a font or did they write it? Isn't that weird? That's a weird question, isn't it?
It's text. Did they write it or... she's a graphic designer, so I think she does it in the computer.
Yeah.
But she has the pen like on the screen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking? Technology.
Yeah. It's a thing. Do you do home recording?
Mm-hmm.
You do?
Okay. Yeah. The whole next record will be that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it going to be full band?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Yeah. We track drums and everything. I used to live in Hyde Park. Even. I lived there until I live where I live now, south. So in the last house I was in off of Avenue C, it was like a good space. Like just a wooden house.
Yeah.
So the drums sounded great in there actually.
Oh, cool. Came so you've already good. Recorded the next mm-hmm. record. Wow.
Yeah. It's ready to go.
So are you super prolific? Is that what's going on?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm pretty busy with songwriting, I mean.
Yeah.
Like it happens pretty often, pretty easy. Yeah, I have like about 100 songs already and I only have 2 EPs out in that, so it's like 20 songs that are out.
Yeah.
So there's like 80 in the bank that I'm...
But you've done it pretty fast. I mean, you've done it over like the last three years.
Since
3 years, you put out 3 releases, 2 EPs and a full-length record, and you've got another one in the can.
Right.
Shit.
I actually have like a few in the can.
Wow.
Yeah, just more. It's not just that one, because that one is actually 24 songs,
too. Well, that's what I was going to say. When you listen to this album, Buenos Dias, with a Z...
With a Z.
You run the gamut from like almost like this 13th floor elevators vibe, like that 1, 2, 3, 4 song mm-hmm. has. It's totally like if you had a.
Yeah, I know. I heard that song like the other day. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. And then there's like even cleaner stuff that would be even more like in a Gary Clark,
mm-hmm.
like ballad kind of way. Which I know that there's someone before him that had ballads like that. You know what I mean? That's just the best touchstone I can go for right now.
Yeah, he's the guy that's around right now.
So is it? Do you just kind of put it like what comes out is how you do it? Because I mean, I like it. I think mm-hmm. it's super cool. But I could see someone being like, "Hey, man, who are you?" You know what I mean?
Oh, just like because the genre is like span such a you know,
which to me is normal. That's what people are like.
Yeah, I think it is. My perspective on that really is. Just with the way the amount of freedom we have as artists today, because it's such a DIY world, you know, just accessible to do at your house or release your music online or however you want to do it. I feel like genres don't matter so much anymore.
So, I don't think so either.
You know, so it's okay to be bold and write a song that's maybe a little country and write a song that's a little punk rock and then write a song that's like new wave.
Yeah.
And it's fine, because if it's like your voice, though, I feel like that's the common thread, whereas, you know, in the old traditional business stuff, they just try to put it in a box, like a genre box.
Right.
So, yeah, I try not to pay attention to that too much.
You just kind of do
it.
Yeah,
just write it.
Yeah.
And then I ask my bandmates, too, so sometimes they help. Because, I mean, for the most part, I'm the band leader, but these guys contribute for sure, you know, they're... ideas, and I ask them frequently, like, hey, what do you think of this?
That's a tenuous thing, and you know, I talk to people about it now more than I ever have before, you know, doing stuff with the Austin Music Foundation. Mm-hmm. You end up talking to people that are like, I don't know how to have a band and be a solo artist with a band, with a band that's like you're like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. How do you do that within the band? Like, do you how much? I mean, you write the songs,
yeah. I think it's one, the biggest part of that is having a relationship with your musicians where they're comfortable telling you what they think with you, because I know some band leaders can be a little like, they just want it their way.
Right, when you play with like Rod Stewart.
Yeah, when I'm on the road with Rod Stewart.
No, but I had a guy here that played with Rod Stewart, and he thought that Rod Stewart doing the jazz stuff that he does now and the rock stuff. He was kind of splitting it up.
Yeah.
He thought it was kind of silly. So in a break at the first rehearsal, he just went up to Rod Stewart and was like, "Hey, man, this is jazz stuff. That's boring, man. You should go. Let's do some more Faces tunes."
And
he's
was
like,
cool.
He's like, "Oh, cool, man. Yeah. I'm glad you think that." And he walked over. Yeah, the tour manager came up and he was like, "What the fuck did you say to him?" And he was like, "Oh, I just told him the jazz thing. He thought it was cool." He's like, "No, you're fired."
Oh, snap.
You know Lance Keltner?
Yeah.
That happened to him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
It's a
thin line that you have to walk again, and it's developing your relationship with your band leader. But I mean, Rod Stewart, Buenos Dias, like.
Well, no, and, right. There's like a different thing when you're getting like, you know, $1,000 a night.
We're off the ground. I'm running these guys. I pay them whatever we all make, and we split it. Rod Stewart, you show up and you play his music.
Right.
I guess it seems like that's the way that would go, you know. How long
have you been playing with these same guys?
So I have a pretty. I'm pretty fortunate. Like, I have a rotating cast of drummers.
Okay.
About three.
Okay.
More, but three are the top three call guys. They all know the music, and they can walk in, and we can do it without a rehearsal.
Okay.
And I have been playing with all of them for about on and off for the 3-year period.
Did you use all of them on the record? Or was it
two of them are on this record, and the third guy who's worked his way into the mix, he's like a younger, hotshot drummer in town. He's finishing up UT Jazz right now, and he's killer. So he's on the new stuff, that record that we were talking about that I cut at the house.
Right.
Yeah. So, but the two guys that I use live out of the three are on this. Yes.
Okay.
So that was fun too, because they play differently, and you know, they have a different, it brings a different flavor to the song, whatever song they're working on.
Right.
You know, and there was one song actually where we used the first guy, and it was nothing to do with his performance, but because we did this all analog, so sometimes there's only one mic on the drums.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so it was very like organic mixing, like the player had to play.
Right.
You know, like, hey, don't hit the cymbals so hard, or like get off the ride and just stay on the hats.
How old are you? How old are you?
I'm 37.
Okay, 30. Okay, yeah. So you were around before the magic of Pro Tools.
It's strange
because there's young people now that is like, like you telling me this, that's like a new thing almost sounding. But that's the way
that's
you're
the way
capturing
was.
Magic.
Yeah, it's a moment thing.
You're not putting together...
takes and
pieces.
Which is a way to do it too.
There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. But there's something to be said about being able to... three people get from the beginning to the end of something.
I think so.
And achieve new levels of magic in the middle of it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. My drummer actually, well, one of the guys, Jeff Olson, that's on it, he wrote this really cool piece actually. He did a blog write-up for Modern Drummer, and he actually talks exactly about what we're talking about. And it was just his, I was like, hey, write something, whatever you want. They said, write whatever you want about the sessions. And so he was explaining that exact thing and how, like, if you're on a in a session where you're doing computers and there's different takes and comps and whatever, it's just like you just lose a certain energy. Whereas if you're in there and you're like just rocking out and it's the full take, that comes through in the speakers and like really can grab you in a certain way, versus where the other one is a little neater and just like more composition oriented.
No, go ahead.
More composition oriented, and the other one's more like raw energy, like boom, here we go.
It's like Meet the Beatles versus the Magical Mystery Tour.
Totally, yeah.
Because they were cutting up tapes and so like slowing shit down and speeding shit up. And
right, yeah. How long did all that tape cutting take?
A long time. Have you ever done that? Have you ever cut tape?
We haven't cut
physically?
Tape yet. No.
I did that.
Did
before
you?
With, well, I, a guy did it and I was there.
I'll say
I was part of it.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Because he did look at me and he goes, I'm really going to do this.
Yeah.
He had a blade the thing and he goes, I'm really going to. It was Mike McCarthy. He was like, I'm really going to do this.
Yeah.
Still into it?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. I haven't seen that's like something I haven't witnessed. And the guy that recorded this, he works all analog for the most part.
That's Daniel McNeil.
Right.
Yeah. And now, is he in White Denim?
He's their front of house guy right
now. Oh, okay, cool.
And he's also, I mean, he's kind of their studio guy too. He has been engineering whatever they're working on right now.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's fantastic, man. He's young, too. He's like, so I think he's 26.
Was it, he's got a place?
Yeah.
With the tape machine? What did you do, 24 track, or did you do?
We did this to the, I'm horrible with model names. It's the Atari machine, and I believe it's half inch. So there were only 8 tracks.
That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, it sounded, well, that sound, and there was a 16 track machine, 2 inch. I mean, we just never got anywhere close to past 7 tracks per song. So we're like, well, don't even deal with that. And the Atari machine had a remote control, so it was like easier just to roll through the sessions more smoothly and stuff.
Right.
Which was nice.
I got very into 16-track 2-inch. Mm. And even when I worked on a record, like on Pro Tools, we still did mm-hmm. all of the basic tracks mm-hmm. on 16-track 2-inch.
Yeah.
Just because physically... That's the most space you can get.
Right. Yeah, but it's got to sound, actually.
It's same as 8-track 1-inch. That's the same amount of space, same fatness you're taking. Because it actually makes a difference. You know,
it does.
8-track cassette and 8-track 1-inch, they're going to sound a lot different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one song we did use it made the 2-inch cut. It's the 1-of-3 track that's on there. And you can hear it. I mean, it's deep.
Yeah.
Like the sound is deep. It's a deep, round sound. And the other ones are full and awesome too, but that one you can tell. At least I can tell the textural difference,
right?
Or maybe it's just because I sat there and watched it happen. So in my head, I'm like, no, it sounds different.
Yeah. You send me a list of your shows, and by the time this comes out, that run of shows will be over, and you're playing a lot,
right? Yeah.
Right now, and then you're heading out for it's a lot of shows from June 6th until July 1st, you're doing the East Coast and Southeast with Alejandro Escovedo as his guitar dude.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about that.
How are rehearsals when you rehearse with him?
We haven't had one yet.
Oh, good.
I have my first one on Monday. So Monday we start.
At Space?
No, we're going up to Dallas.
Oh, okay. Because he's up there.
He's up there now, so... We're heading up there Monday morning, and we'll rehearse sometime on Monday and leave from there, because then we're heading to Kansas City, I think is the first stop, if I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, dude, we get to stay at the Belmont and whatnot.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to ask you. That's my favorite place there.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of my, there's a couple good hotels in Texas that I think are kick-ass, but that one's kick-ass.
Have you ever been to the hotel in San Antonio, the Havana Club? Havana Club.
I stayed at like the Fairmont, which is a classic hotel
that's
there.
Classic. Yeah, this place is just like an old, just like a large Texas. I mean, Texas doesn't have Victorian homes, but you know, with columns and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's been there since the 1800s. It's in downtown San Antonio, but their bar is like in the basement.
Oh,
so I went in. I was meeting some friends there. Do you know these guys? Actually, have you checked out the Last Bandoleros?
No, but I know that name for some reason.
Well, they're the Nevada Kids, so Emilio's kids, the Tejano singer Emilio.
I don't know that guy.
There was Selena and Emilio in the 90s, and they're his kids, and they're opening for Sting right now.
Oh, no shit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Somebody laid a whole trip on me about them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great. I mean, it's like...
They opened for him here, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just recently. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Someone told me about that.
Yeah, they've literally been touring the whole world, because they're in... Korea right now. Anyways, they're from San Antonio, and I've done wedding gigs with those guys, just like side gigs. And
real quick,
sorry,
I was on the phone today with an old friend of mine, Amy McSpadden.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got a package. She's like, who you got going in today? I was like, it's guy Nick Diaz. She's like, I totally love that dude.
I know. Yeah. Amy's great. She's a sweetheart. Great. She's fun to work with too. But yeah, so they are from San Antonio though, and they were the ones that were like, hey, come meet us here. So I walk into the hotel. And, you know, I mean, it's super classy, antique furniture, dark hardwood floors. There's not anything going on there. I'm like, I don't think I'm in the right place. Some lady walks out from some wooden door. And mind you, I mean, this house looks like it's in the 1800s still. So she comes out. Can I help you? And I said, I don't know if I'm in the right place. I was supposed to meet some friends here, but it looks like nothing's going on in this hotel lobby. She's like, take the elevator to the basement. So I go down, and it's just like, poof, and it opens up into this super speakeasy, just like sweet
killer
bar, and then there's the party.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great. But that's a really nice hotel. If you're in San Antonio next,
I will.
You want to grab a cocktail? That's the spot.
I will check it out.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So, so when you go out for a month, when you come back at the beginning of July, you go back to the Buenos Dias
grind.
Right.
Right into it. I think right now, we already have Saturday, July 8th at the Mohawk, so that'll be fun. Do you know this guy, Julian Acosta? He's local.
I know that name.
Yeah, we're going to do a build together on that.
Cool.
That night, so that should be fun. He's local. He's got a pretty good draw and everything. So.
Yeah. You seem to be playing a lot of different places here.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Let me go back real quick. How did you meet Alejandro? How did that happen?
Yeah.
Was Craigslist? No, I'm joking.
No, it's classifieds, actually. I actually busted out the newspaper. He's the only dude in all of Texas. Yeah,
he's so old. He's so old, he doesn't even know about Craigslist.
He's so old school. He's like, put it in the classifieds, guys. I met him in a really roundabout way. No, he just does that because that's the coolest way to do it. Yeah. No one's doing it that way.
Yeah.
I met him in a really roundabout way, actually. I know his tour manager from when I used to live in New York, actually, and just friends. We met at a beer garden in Brooklyn, and I was playing with this New Orleans-style brass band, and so he just came up and said hello, and we just really connected on our love of New Orleans and New Orleans music. And so we just got to know each other, and then we would hang out from time to time. But he was a Texas dude, so then he moved back finally, and I moved back. Didn't even know that happened. And I was playing a gig right here on Congress at Snack Bar, because I used to play there solo on Mondays. Oh, yeah? And he was walking by, and he just pointed at me, so he walked in. We had some drinks and hung out and reconnected.
Yeah.
And then we were just out and about somewhere or another, and he just straight up was like, hey, would you ever want to play guitar for Alejandro? You know, I tour managed for him. And I said, yeah. I mean, sure, throw my name in that. Let's see where it goes. And then we ended up hanging out at the Continental Club after one of Alejandro's shows. And I met him, and I told him, I was like, hey, if you ever need a guitar player, just holler at me. So then those two things happened. And then I was working part-time, and I was working with his daughter. And so his daughter, I think, fed it in his head as well.
Maya?
And then the final roundabout way it actually went down, there's these other two, to me, like two of the killingest guitar players in Texas, Carter Arrington and Matt Mueling. Mm-hmm. These guys are just, they can play anything on top of their head, you know. And Carter had already done the gig, but they're both super busy with teaching and they have families and stuff. So, you know, Alejandro's on the road a lot. So I think that kind of, they just weren't available for that kind of road.
Yeah.
So they called him again and they weren't available. And then they were like, call Nick Diaz. That's who you want. So it's kind of a really roundabout way.
Yeah, your name kept coming up.
Just kept coming up. I didn't really do anything. I was just kind of grinding away on my own scene.
Do you know the three stages of show business career?
I don't know what. I don't think I do.
Okay, it goes, who is Nick Diaz? Get me Nick Diaz. Find me someone that sounds like Nick Diaz.
I never heard that. All right.
So you went through the first two with Alejandro.
Yeah, all right. Let's make that third one happen now, right? That's cool.
Find me someone that sounds like Nick Diaz.
Yeah.
So that's cool, man. So you haven't done the deed yet.
No, I have.
No, you have. You've done some shows.
I did two one-offs with him at the end of last year. And that was, I kind of feel like he's testing me sometimes. But it was just like, I mean,
he has that vibe.
Yeah.
Even just like knowing him.
It's just like, it's like a jazz vibe. It's like, you got it. We need to talk about it. Just
he's
play.
Totally like that. Yeah. That's a great way to describe it. He's like he's like an old jazz cat. Mm-hmm. He wants to see if you can hang.
That's it. Really?
In any kind of weather.
Yeah.
And then if you can, then you
then right. You're cool and you're in.
We'll go out for a month.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it was, because the first two, that's what I meant when there were no rehearsals, you know. And the first one, I mean, I had to crank out, I think, like 22 songs in 2 weeks and just learn it and show up and do it.
How do you do that? How do you take on 22 songs in 2 weeks? Like, how do you break it down and learn?
Yeah, I guess I have a
couple
method.
Songs a day or something. Or you don't have a lot of time when you're doing that.
No. Well, first order of business is just make a playlist of the set.
Listening to it.
Man, and that's actually the beauty of like a Spotify or Apple Music, is that you can just do it immediately and listen to it all the time.
Right.
Anywhere you are. You know, I mean, business stuff aside, because we could totally go into that rabbit hole about Spotify and whatnot, but for a learning tool, it's amazing, and it's a library at your fingertips. And so an opportunity like this arises, so I put the playlist together and boom, I'm just listening.
That's all the time.
I mean, wake up, go to sleep with it, so it's like you're getting that really deep register of the songs. And then, you know, do that for a few days and then jump in, and I don't read music, like staff music, but I can read my own version of written music now.
Yeah, you make your own charts.
Yeah, I make my own charts. Yeah, makes sense, and it's the chord changes, real basic and stuff. So then I write it all out, and then I just play along with it and just over and over and over until it's time to go, and then you just fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll have like a thing that'll be like A, G, E, and if there's a riff, I'll write down word-wise what, like, deedle deedle dee.
Oh, nice. I actually write,
I know the riff.
I write out the individual notes.
Sometimes
so like
I do
A,
that.
B, and I separate it by commas instead of bars. The bars to me is like, a, I guess, a bar.
Yeah.
So if it's a riff, then I just separate it by commas.
Yeah.
It's funny. Deedle-deedle-dee. I like that. I might have to try that, though.
I did that. I just did a thing with the Bodines, and I had to learn a lot of songs.
Sure.
And it was, I made a playlist.
Yeah.
Luckily, what they did was they sent me a show.
Oh, cool.
Because they have their songs. Have you ever seen them?
I've just seen some stuff online.
Their songs are like 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
But when they play live, they're like 6.5 minutes.
Okay.
So there's like a thing, and then there's like a breakdown, and there's everybody sings, and you're taking a nap or a shower or something.
Right.
And so I had these shows to listen to, but I just listened to those shows.
Yeah.
I had about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I immersed myself in...
Yeah.
I would set up a station where I had my charts and then like that thing, and I'd just kind of like sit here and just play.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you have to break it down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and then so when I'm writing the songs, because that's also... You're internalizing it when you do that, obviously.
Right, yeah.
So that I can really only do like maybe 6 to 7 in one sitting, because you're really focused when you're writing it out like that too.
Yeah.
So I have to take a break for a couple hours or come back that evening or whatever. So
you do need a break.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
you can just get
it just gets all.
It becomes a giant. It like
yeah.
it's like mashed potatoes.
Right. Yeah.
Like the whole set.
It's
and
just
you're
one
like,
song.
Where's that one song?
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. So you have to take a step away from it.
You know, one thing that threw me was the show that I was listening to of the Bodines was from Cedarburg, somewhere called Cedarburg.
Okay.
And so it kind of threw me when I did shows because he wasn't going, Cedarburg, at the end of every song.
Oh, right. <yeah.
laughs> He'd say it like, Houston. And I was like, oh, that's weird. It's Cedarburg, man. That's what you say.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the fuck that is. But I love that you say it after every song. It's very unique.
That's great. That's funny.
So so let's go back. So you grew up in Houston?
Yeah.
You were born there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Heights Hospital.
Where was I?
If I guessed it
I
right,
say
that's amazing.
Yeah, that would have been. I think it was St. Joe's downtown.
Oh, yeah, downtown. Downtown.
That's downtown, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one with the Jesus guy on the freeway when you go by. Jesus is like pretty much eye level with you.
I think
you.
That's
He's
where
like,
I was
hey,
born.
What's up?
I don't remember. I should find that out before time passes on.
I don't think it's that bad to.
Okay.
Give me 1 second.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't want this AC to come back on.
Yeah.
So, you lived on the east side. Is that like near the 4th or 3rd ward, one of the wards? I don't know how the wards work.
I don't
there.
Either. You know, I'm from there, but I... Houston's always funny to me because as a Houstonian, and this makes sense to Houstonians, we don't ever know like northwest, southeast. We just like, oh yeah, you know, like Westheimer and Kirby. You know, like
a spot. Right.
Yeah. But you don't necessarily know directionally where exactly that is. So, like, it is southeast.
Yeah.
And I don't, the same thing with the wards. I don't really know where they all are.
Right.
I think
it's
second ward. It's just south of second ward.
Okay.
I think that's the one.
All I know is, like, when they say a ward, then there's a ghetto.
It's totally, that's
like,
true.
Like, if they don't say it, if they say Sharpstown or Bel Air, it's like regular.
It's regular. Yeah. Right. It's regular.
regular.
Yeah.
So, so you grew up there. Did you have music people in your family?
Not really. I mean, my introduction to music really starts from just my sister got lessons, and then
in guitar
we started with piano. She did piano for 7 years, and I played piano for 1 year. They offered free lessons at like the elementary school I was at or whatever, and so I did that. But it was kind of I guess I progressed kind of quickly, so I got bored, so I quit. And then she picked up guitar when she was like 16, and I was like I guess 12, right around there. And that's the one that stuck. And I just asked her to show me a few chords, and then I dove in. So, but my dad would always, he would fiddle around. But no one was ever any professional. There was no professional musician or anything around. It was just people fiddling around with it. And so then I picked it up, and I was the first one to kind of take off with that. And I just taught myself. It was his ear. It was old school ear learning and training. Zeppelin and, you know, all the classic dudes, Stevie Ray, Hendrix, all that.
How did you get back into, because you've obviously learned, you've gone back to where those guys, like where Stevie Ray went back to, where Jimmy went back to. How did you find that stuff out? Like, what did you do? You know, like Howlin' Wolf. How did you? Did you come across that shit? Did you go back to?
It all started with Stevie Ray and Zeppelin, because those were some CDs my sister had lying around. So she's old. She's like 4 years older than me. So she was in high school when I was like picking all this up. So she was into rock and roll.
Right.
And then yes. So I went through that, and then I remember she had that classic Robert Johnson box set.
Right.
The one with the creepy photo.
What you're talking about. Yeah.
So she had that lying around too, but that was like too deep for me. It was like really creepy and I didn't like it at first listen. It was really heavy. And even funny, same thing with Hendrix. I didn't like him so much, but Stevie was more blues. So it was an easier listening experience.
Yeah.
And then through that, I don't remember how I, cause I really did dive deep and hard into like the Texas guys, you know, Albert Collins and T-Bone Walker and Freddie King and all the good Texas stuff. But I started when I was 16, finally, I started hanging out and sneaking into like the blues clubs. And Houston has an incredibly rich blues scene.
Did you go like Etta's and shit like that?
I did. I would go to Etta's. There was Silky's on Washington. There was also Billy Blues on Richmond and the Big Easy, which is still there. And I still go hang there sometimes. Like a lot of my friends still play
when
there.
When did the Ready Room go? Remember the Ready Room that was there on... White Oak. It's like, remember when there was a Conoco across the street from Fitzgerald's?
Mm-hmm.
Across Studemont? On the other side of that Conoco was this little place. I think now it's a restaurant, but that was a blues place called the Ready Room.
I know what you're talking about.
Very much like Etta's. And kind of like this small, just funky ass.
Yeah. Yeah. I never went to that place. I did do Fitzgerald's, of course. You kind of have to coming from Houston.
Right.
So I think once I started like making the hang around, well, then I was like really hanging around like blues musicians.
Yeah.
And they would tell me things and I would go dig around and find it.
Sharing the wisdom.
Yeah, they really would.
Yeah.
And again, there was, 90.1 KPFT.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, from noon to three every Sunday. I mean, they're just spinning the deep cuts of old shit, you know, old blues.
Who told you to listen to that? How did you find out about that? You got to thank that person. You know what I mean? Because surely changed your life. It gave you an education.
That was a big
homeschooling. 3 hours a week every Sunday.
Every Sunday,
12 to 3.
It was. I see. That's the thing is, I don't have recollection of anyone ever telling me anything. It maybe casually came up in conversation, and then I would just go do it. But I'm always like, I mean, I like new wave and pop music from the 80s a ton. But then, you know, that was all in the early 90s. That was like when we were getting into that dangerous area of like commercial radio just getting really untasteful. So I would always like shift to the college stations or the, you know, NPR stations, public radio stations. And I think I might have just stumbled upon it because it's always down in the 90s, the 88.1, whatever, you know, like that's where all the public radio is going on. Yeah, and all the cool stuff's down there. So I would just dig around.
90.5 K-True.
Yeah.
That was a cool station.
Yeah. So... I don't have a memory of anyone ever telling me about 90.1. Maybe they will hear this and then they will pop up.
You ever go on there?
I have. I've been on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. There used to be that dude. He's not there anymore. Rourke.
Yeah.
Rourke was an awesome DJ.
Yeah.
But he retired from the radio.
There's a guy there now. I think he still has a show. Jeffrey Thames. You know that guy?
That name sounds familiar.
Sound Awake, I think, is the name of the show. Pretty cool show.
Nice.
Okay, so you were getting into 80s new wave. Like, who were your guys there?
Yeah, because then, like, well, on the car rides to school and my older sister and cousins, we would ride to school together in the morning. And it was just like, shoot, I mean, I don't know. I was blank on this spot. But either way, I mean, I love the Talking Heads. I just love that, like, gated reverb sound on drums. And just like the quirky vocal delivery that's almost like talking, ba 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 ba, like whatever, you know, stuff like that. What's that song? There was that, like, I guess this was a little more 90s, but it was like a pop song and it was like Send Me an Angel.
Oh, dude. Well, they re-released it in the 90s. Okay. I had a magical experience with those guys.
Really?
Remember Cactus when it was on Shepherd?
Absolutely.
Before they moved it when it was by where Whole Foods was? Okay. Mm-hmm. I worked at that Whole Foods.
Okay,
and
cool.
I played at Fitzgerald's and I loved that band from when I was like, I think they came out when I was like 14 or 15.
Okay.
But then that song, it was huge there on KRBE.
Yeah.
I remember that summer. It was like 89 or something. It was fucking huge.
Yeah.
And they came on a Club MTV tour.
Okay.
And they were playing the same night we were playing. And they, I went over there to meet them when I got off work with my keyboard player, because he worked at Whole Foods too. So we walked over there, met those dudes. Nobody was there to meet them. It was like it was like the Spinal Tap record signing, where there was like a table and all this shit, and they were like, "We don't want to sit here." They were asking their tour manager, "Can you go tell the guys we just don't want to sit? Like, this is fucking sad."
Yeah.
And so then we all went outside and just kind of hung out and smoked and shot the shit with those guys for a while. Yeah. And we ended up going to see them that night at the Summit for their thing.
At the Summit, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I don't know. They're called Real Life. That's what they're called. Yeah.
But yeah, I love that song. What is it? I guess like I also love like the UB40 stuff, like Red Red Wine and just good. To me, that was just good pop music, you know? The singers were great. The stuff wasn't overproduced. I mean, sure, there's reverb and stuff on it, but it wasn't like sampled and replaced stuff. I don't know. It just had more of a feel to it to me than sometimes stuff that comes out these days with computers and resampling drum hits and, you know, quantizing things. Those players were playing in the studio for the most part.
There is something about that early new wave, like even shit like Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Technologically, it's not in computer world yet, but it's very futuristic, but they're still working in analog and doing all that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, I completely
There's
agree.
Something pretty cool sounding about that sort of like 1979 to 1982 era.
Exactly.
Before the DX7 and before drum machines became real prevalent.
Right, yeah. And of course, Prince. I mean, Prince was Prince of New Wave in his own way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my education for the foundation was like poppy new wave bands and blues.
Wow. Yeah. Because that's interesting because that's kind of who you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then what happened? So you got after high school, what did you do?
Well, so actually it was kind of not this part I do remember just because I don't know, it was vivid, but I actually got offered to play guitar in like a local blues band and they were working pretty steadily. And, but then they all found out that I was 18 or whatever, and I had just graduated school, and they didn't let me join their bands because they made me go to college, basically. Mm. And there was like 2 to 3 bands that asked me to do it, but these were also like, I mean, they were adults. They were like 30, 31, whatever. One of them was actually like in an academic administrator somewhere. Mm. So of course she's like this badass blues singer, and she was like, "No, you're going to college. You got to go do that first before you come around here again." So it was almost like I was shoved off.
Where'd you go to college?
So then in researching universities and colleges, I really made it a point to go to a town that was musically rich and completely far away from Texas. So I was like looking at Chicago, I was looking at Memphis, I was looking at New Orleans.
And I
landed in New Orleans just because the best deal that I got at the time. So I moved to New Orleans, packed up at 18. Then I was gone for like 15 years before I moved back to Texas. And
so you went to New Orleans, you went to San Francisco, you went to New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you like all this? What did you do there?
Everything was always revolved around music, but because I feel like in retrospect now, where it's like, now I'm playing for a living right now, and it's been a while since that has happened for me. And back then, I was always working a ton part-time and playing and just, you know, just doing whatever you had to do to pay rent and pay bills, too.
It's phenomenal when you can look back, because I can look back and being like, I would go to work at Whole Foods at 7 in the morning.
Right.
Get off at like 3:30. Like, but work 7 to 3, so I'd be up at like 6. Work 7 to 3. Go home, take a 2-hour nap. Jump in my car at 6 o'clock traffic, drive across town to the Rock Center. Did you know that place that was off of like Bissonnette or something?
No, but I know where
it's a warehouse place down south. And so I go there, practice until like, you know, 10.
Yeah.
Go to Lola's or Emo's or something and be there till 2.
Right.
And then go back and start over again. Yeah. And it's just like no big deal.
That was my life for the past 3.5 years when I moved to Austin. I was working at the cafe.
Yeah.
And then so that nap, you needed that nap. You had to have that nap.
That nap works, man.
You need that.
It makes the whole thing come together.
That's how
it pulls the room together.
Yeah. It's the only way. It's the only way you can make it till 2.
I'm still like that. Like, I really, like, on days that I have gigs, I have to take a nap at some point.
Me too. I know. Yeah. So that's what I was doing out there a lot. And again, in retrospect, it's just like, I just wasn't quite there with like my musical experience and education, you know. So, that's why, like, I would get a gig and it was sweet, but then it was only temporary, and then the gig would just end. It wasn't like I got fired or anything. And then I just didn't, I don't know, I hadn't made enough hang or didn't meet the right folks yet, and I would have to go work because I was just, you know, running out of the money I'd made on the road or whatever was happening.
Right.
You know, so for this time, that hasn't happened. We can keep our fingers crossed for that.
I feel like that shit's just always, it's a cycle. You gotta it's a matter of how you handle it. Because it's always...
Right. It could also be me just being smarter with my money now that I'm older, too.
Probably, yeah.
You know, instead of whatever.
Probably when you get paid, you put it away because you don't know what's going to happen in the next month.
Right.
As opposed to when you get paid when you were younger, you're like, fuck, Strat.
Let's get some drinks. Let's get some beers and some guitars. Yeah, absolutely.
Or something you got nothing to show for except for a hangover.
And you're so like, damn, horrible. Now I got to go work.
So did you ever get into the 13th floor elevators? Like, I want to know where this garage... Like, you have John Spencer Blues Explosion in your bio, but I feel like it goes beyond that.
Yeah,
I feel like it goes older than that.
No, for sure. So New Orleans happened, and I was there in school, but I hit the club scene as quickly as I could and just, like, was gigging a ton in New Orleans. And I had a different band. I mean, it was the Nick Diaz, whatever. And so... But it was me... writing songs and playing gigs and stuff, but New Orleans is so traditional in its musical heritage, which is beautiful. That's why it's New Orleans. It's like funk music, jazz, or just like out the box, up from fucking Mars shit. Like, to play Texas rock and roll or like a twist on blues rock and roll just doesn't make sense there. It doesn't have an attraction to people.
Right.
They want brass in their bands and they want it to dance and want it funky.
Yeah.
So It inevitably led me to want to move away because I was no longer satisfied, like, musically. I love that stuff, and I listen to it all the time now.
Yeah.
But so then that's what ended me going to New York and Katrina. I moved out the month before Katrina hit.
Oh, good move.
Yeah. And so there was no New Orleans to go back to.
Right.
So I stayed in New York. So then when I was in New York, I really dove into more of the indie scene and the, you know, and we talk about technology and synthesizers. I mean, that's where, I mean, Brooklyn is... the mecca for synth rock pop whatever and simple all day.
That's what I think of when I think of Brooklyn, like,
yeah it's like the simplest stuff, and so that, but that simplicity dates back to the Ramones,
yeah,
you know, really, and that's just an element of New York music. And so I was around that a ton, and then when I was in San Francisco, I was only there on and off for a year, and I was just writing and working odds and ends jobs. That was actually where I started writing even some of the stuff on this record, was in San Francisco. And I came home and I did it. And so through all my friends in New York, and I mean, that's like how I met Joseph and stuff, you know, our friend. Mm-hmm. But being around the indie scene in New York, it just really added this kind of like more garagey element to what I started doing. And I loved it and just the rawness. So last year, my old roommate was a librarian actually, and she had the Patti Smith book, Just Kids. And so I dove into that, and I was reading, and I fell in love with it. But I was just like, why do I not really know Patti Smith and the Ramones and Blondie? And I was like, I was running around those streets till 4 a.m. for 6 years. I was like, so I just went down the rabbit hole last year, really. And it was while I was working on this.
Yeah.
And I think it really just – and I found a home in that because, again, just living in New York for 6 years – I was like, how have I really just not paid attention to like this garagey punk element?
Have you ever gotten into television?
Yeah.
Because it seems like you would love them.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah, Tom Verlaine.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're amazing. And so that led to that. It's just, I finally like, I felt like connected the dots of like, you know, some new wave elements, New Orleans. Because I've actually worked with other drummers and they're like, man, there's a big swing element like, to your music.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that comes from living in New Orleans and being around all that stuff for so long. And then the punk stuff from New York, you know, and then of course Texas blues. So it all comes from
Texas blues does have a pretty solid swing
it
to
does
it.
Too. I mean, yeah, absolutely. It does. So it all just kind of came together.
It'd be funny if Chris Layton just popped up in the window and was like, you're goddamn right. And then back down.
That would be amazing.
You know those guys? I mean, do you go to like Blue Monday? Do you go into the world of the Denny Freemans and the Yves Moncés and the?
I don't know them particularly.
Jimmy Vaughn.
I know. I've said hi to Jimmy Vaughn a couple of times. We've chatted briefly. I don't know that he knows who I am, but I'm friends with Mike Flanagan though, the organ player.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first people I met here because that organ scene, like the B3 organ scene, it's pretty small knit circle around the country, because the guys that play the real organ, it's like it's just a small crew, you know. And so I have an old friend from New York, and he was like, "Look up Mike when you get down there."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Tell him that you know me, and he'll, you know, he'll just show you around or whatever. He'll hang with you to get you started."
Yeah.
So I know Mike more than any of those other guys.
Yeah.
And I know about all the other players, of course, but I don't know them personally. So I do go down
love Mike,
to Blue Monday every once in a while. I mean, I hang out at Sea Boys. You know, there's tons of blues there. And I've gone to the jam at Friends and stuff, you know, down 6th Street.
Are you a Tesmer fan?
I like Eric. That's he's cool. Great, yeah. Again, it's not someone that I know. I love that he's carrying the torch.
He does. There's a torch he's carrying.
He is,
and he's got something going on. Like,
yeah.
I've been seeing this for the last like couple years. Like,
he's been around forever.
It's one of those things where you're like, you never really want to quit drinking, but you realize like some people when they quit drinking and get their shit together, they get their fucking shit together, and that's a dude that like he was like, fuck it. He like moved into his like rehearsal space. Like, that's where he lives.
Wow. I didn't know.
He's just like, he is not fuck. He's just fucking doing it. He's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
This is all I got. I'm doing it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Playing like that too. It feels like I've noticed, you notice that with people.
Sure.
Do you go see guitar guys? I mean, because you're a song guy too, and you're a singer guy, but you're also a guitar guy.
Absolutely.
And there are those guys that like sit around and watch, do you sit around and watch like,
oh, like YouTube vids and stuff?
YouTube vids of like Eric Johnson testing out the latest TC Electronics chorus
pedals. I absolutely have gone down the rabbit hole. I maybe don't do it as much these days, but yeah. It's funny. I like revamped my whole pedal board actually when I moved to Austin. I was just using like old shit. I mean, and not that there's anything wrong with it, but I was just like still using a Tube Screamer and like a Boss distortion pedal. And that was like the rig that like Chris Duarte used in the 90s.
Right, Duarte. You know?
And I was like playing some shows around here, and some friends were just like, "Hey, can I just ask you an honest question? Like, why are you using shit from the 90s? You know how much good guitar stuff is out there?"
Yeah.
And they're like, "A player of your caliber should really go check out what's out there and maybe think about getting some hot new
what's
boutique
your
stuff."
let's go sure. For the nerds that have hung on this long.
Yeah,
here you go.
So
what are you using?
So it was just like the light bulb went off and I was like, damn. Well, so then I went into the YouTube rabbit hole and I was like looking at all these different fuzz factories and delays and all
this
the last
20 years.
Yeah,
right. That's when Fuzz Factory. Who's the people that make the Fuzz Factory? The super expensive hand.
Yeah, I can't remember
the
who makes
fingernail
it.
Fingernail polish.
Right. Yeah.
X. No.
Electro-Harmonix.
Zvex.
Oh, okay.
Zvex.
Maybe.
That's
who makes the
Fuzz Factory and those ones that are written with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. and that's anyway. So I stumbled upon a company that's boutique. It's small. It's out of Athens, Georgia. Nick Greer. He makes Greer amps, but then he also makes stomp boxes, and. And I have this pedal called the Black Fuzz, and it's just like, I mean, it's the roundest, you kick it on and it's just like, it's like the guitar just grows into this like giant monster.
That's
or something.
Killer.
Yeah, it just widens the sound. So I really fell in love with that stuff after, and I studied because these things aren't cheap either, man. Like,
no, when you get into the boutique shit, you're paying like $500 for a fuzz pedal you could get for literally $20 at a fucking pawn shop.
Right.
I mean, not the same.
Not the same.
But
and there is a difference.
You could go get a Big Muff or something.
Yeah. So I really fell in love with the Greer stuff. And more than anything, I even fell in love with them more again this year because sometimes those little silver switches go out. They're just, you just stomp on
them. Oh, the stomp, yeah.
It just goes out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's gone out on me twice over 2 years. And I mean, I gig a ton. I'm hard on my stuff too.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And I mean, when I email him, Nick, the guy that makes it is the guy that writes me back. I mean, that's the customer service you want in anything you do. Like the
and
owner.
And you send it back. You're like, hey,
I pay for the postage and then they send it back and no charge or anything. Lifetime warranty.
That's why that's what you're paying for, man. Boss isn't going to do that for
no,
you.
No, Boss didn't care.
They'll send you another plastic piece of shit
right,
for free.
Right, exactly. No one's going to talk to you or anything.
And it's not Steve Boss answering the phone
no,
over there.
Not at all.
What kind of amp are you using?
So those are my two main fuzz pedals. And then I fell in love with Strymon. Strymon is the shit. If I don't know, are you familiar with Strymon?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have the Flint, which is like the tremolo
reverb.
Right,
they do that EP boost and stuff?
They have so many.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And then I have the Brigadier, which is, it's a bucket loss delay. So that's cool because bucket loss, it's like you can add tape warble to it.
Oh, that's cool.
So you can make your delay really dirty or like kind of like trippy and psychedelic with the warbles. So I use those, and then I actually have the Electro Harmonix Freeze pedal because I do a lot of solo gigs where I'm focusing on my songs, or I'm working on new songs and I go play solo, but I utilize my lead guitar elements just more as textural.
Give yourself
a little pad and stuff. So the Freeze pedal like freezes things and I can like solo around it. And it's not a
looper.
No, it's not that I tried that, didn't really work for me. I think it's cool. I wish I could do it better, but the Freeze pedal is great. It's a drone, so you just like, it's almost like an Indian drone note and you can play around it, and I really like that. And then I also have the whammy pedal for harmonizing and sub octave stuff.
That was another turn that you took that I was like, okay, so I could how in a traditional blues sense you totally would step out of that when you put in that whammy pedal into it, and it's pretty fucking cool.
It is cool,
by the way.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It is cool. It's
when
fun.
I hear those, I get excited because the bass player, I'm going to go see him in and out. Are you going to that wind down thing?
No, not tonight. Okay. I actually have to run to Dallas for a gig.
Tonight? Yeah. So you just stopped off to do the interview and take off?
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
I don't know. Thank you. This is fine. I'm getting my road chops up before I leave for a tour on Monday.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's good. When Alejandro's going to get you on fire.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. I'll be ready.
You know what he said when we did this podcast?
Oh, he's done it? I didn't know he had done it.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He goes, I had to stop because I had to pee, and he goes, I'm Johnny, I'm not talking too much about myself, am I? The fuck are you supposed to do in this fucking situation, dude?
There's like, two of us here just talking. Like, just what are you guys going to talk about?
An interview Alejandro Escovedo about the melting ice caps.
Right. And real quick, my amp that I use is a Diamond Positron from Houston. It's another boutique.
Oh.
And they usually make metal amps, actually, like heavy metal.
Yeah.
But this Positron is their model after a Princeton. So it's a blues amp.
Oh, that's nice.
It's great. It's 18 watts and a 12-inch speaker. And it's like, so if you turn it up, it just gets dirtier. It doesn't necessarily get louder, which is perfect.
Yeah, I think it's time for, I mean, not that this is about me.
No,
but
go for it.
I've been playing Fender amps for like 13 years.
Yeah.
I think it's time to move on to it.
That's kind of how I felt when I made this move, finally. I mean, I still have a Fender, but it's actually needs repair, so I'm not using it. Otherwise, I would use it more. But somehow I stepped out of that. Just, it wasn't even like a conscious move. I just plugged into that Diamond, and I was just like, I have to have that. I never even thought about Fender again after that. And I love Fender.
So wait, you're playing in Dallas tonight,
yeah,
and then you're playing here tomorrow,
yeah,
and then you're playing here the next day?
Yeah.
Then you have to go to Dallas again on Wednesday? On Monday?
On Monday, yeah. I'm playing every night until I leave, basically.
Good.
Yeah.
You fucking better.
Okay, I will. You got it. Yeah, it's great. It picked up. Now it's busy again, and this is what you want. You want to be working. You want to be busy, and when it shows up,
Let me ask you this is, before we go, is a sideman thing, because there are guys like our friend Joseph that you mentioned.
Yeah.
He's not a guy that you're going to find playing keyboards in a reggae band.
I would love to see that, though.
I know, but he's not. There's guys that just aren't that guy.
Absolutely.
But then there are guys that are like, I want to do everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm that way. I mean, I've been the sideman.
Sure.
In a lot of bands.
Yeah.
And a lot of times just for free, like, hey, I'll do it. You know, much. I got that row. I'll take it.
Yeah.
You know, just to go do something different.
Yeah.
Do you want, now that you're doing Buenos Dias, does it behoove you to get out with guys like Alejandro and take off for a month or 2 months and
absolutely
go out and just what does that do for you?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I just not the kind of person that runs it. I mean, who is? If you get a cool gig, it's like, you don't go run around and be like, I'm playing with this guy. So I don't even really talk about playing with Alejandro that much. If it comes up in conversation, I'll talk about it. But it's like I keep Buenos Dias and him separate. But there is this kind of recognition thing that's happening for Buenos Dias because of it, which is cool. I'll take it. It's not a active thing that I'm like trying to make happen.
Oh yeah, no. Know? I mean more like, what do you get out of it?
Well, right. So
like, yeah,
So that part is cool because that's just like a side note that happens. But this is like a perfect actually tie-in, is because like that new record that I recorded at the house, it's mixed. It's ready to go. Like, I'm going to run back to Daniel McNeil's. We're going to run it through tape and a compressor just to add some beefiness to it. you know. But I was playing it for a friend, and he was just like, you know, can I just be honest with you? And I was like, yeah, of course, Tom. You don't go through the biz and you're offended like that. You just not, you know. And so he was just like, man, I think you can cut your vocals a little better just because. When did you record these? And I was like, about 2 years ago, probably. And he was like, you've been singing for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I've seen you play some of these songs live. And he's like, and now the new record is lending it's more about the songs, less about the guitar. And he's like, these are really good, man. He's like, it's more about your vocal now. So you need to make sure that's what's grabbing people. The guitar
that's a good
and the
music. Friend.
It is a good friend. And he's like, the guitar and the music production, it's there. You don't need to do anything. But if you can just
go back,
send
and
that
sing.
Vocal over the edge, then you're going to pull everyone in. And he's like, and then you're really doing it. And I was like, so we talked about that for a little while and listened to different songs. And then I said, man, thank you for telling me that.
Yeah.
It's going to make me think about this. And the best part is I'm going to step away for a month and come back with fresh ears and listen then and decide whether or not I'm going to tackle that, if I think it's the move or not.
Yeah.
And I was like, but if no one ever said anything, I would just... wouldn't even think about it.
And you're going out with, and I'm not blowing, so I'm a huge fan of Alejandro as a guy and as a musician.
Yeah.
And I realize there's people that are like, oh, you can only sing three notes. Yeah, but you know what? Those fucking three notes are fucking killer.
Fucking killer.
And where he places them in a Sinatra style.
Yeah.
In where the one, the two, the three, and the four relate,
right.
Where he places those notes.
Yeah.
Is what makes him a fuck. It's making the hair on my arms.
You kind of just did that to me too.
Like
that's really weird.
That guy.
That was weird.
That guy is a fucking jazz guy.
Yeah.
Like he knows
he's a monster.
He is a fucking monster,
yeah.
Man.
He's a
monster, and you're gonna get great. You know, yeah. When I've played with people, a lot of times, sometimes it's for the money, but the most of the times that I've gone is for the experience of playing with that person every night. Like doing Ian Moore, like we grew up as bros. But that tour, every night I was like, wow. You know, every night I picked up something, I realized where I need to fix my game.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, fuck, he's doing that.
I know.
Shit, I need to throw that into my
totally
thing.
Yeah.
You know? And not even like ripping him off, but just like really like gleaning everything positive out of that experience that you can.
I mean, that's about as close as you can get to an apprenticeship or mentorship in music.
Yeah.
Is being invited by someone like that who has just 4 years of experience, but also, you know, just mountains of talent and vibe.
Yeah.
And you can only pick that stuff up by standing next to them.
Yeah.
And you can only stand next to them if they invite you over. So, you know, that's a huge deal. And it's an opportunity that
and every actually, night. Every dude, every night watching them handle every situation really adds a lot too.
Yeah.
Like that's a big thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck. You're going to have fun out there.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
I bet.
I'm excited about it. I was listening to the stuff when I was driving in from Houston because I've got to learn a few more songs still.
I hate that feeling.
12.
I'm feeling
12 by Monday. Rehearsal's Monday, and I just got 12 new ones.
Oh, wow.
So I got to do homework, though. But, man, again, it's like, yeah, the dude believes in me. He doesn't have to call me. He can call anyone he wants, you know. And he doesn't have to ask me to sing because he asked me to sing a ton, too. So, you know.
Oh, that's great. I was going to ask you that because I know he has backup singers. But
yeah. No, so the band right now is just a four-piece rock and roll.
So, oh, because the new record.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, his record's more.
I need to listen to it more.
Yeah, check it out. It's fun. It's cool. It's just two guitars, drums, and bass, and me and him up front singing.
That's fucking killer, man.
Yeah,
who's on drums right now?
Someone I haven't met this fella. He's a newer guy. He didn't do the two one-offs that I did. So Scott, I think is his name. He plays with Elias Hausinger.
Oh, yeah.
On Mondays.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I
that guy's great too. That guy's a jazz guy.
Oh, that guy is jazz.
Yeah, he really is.
I know. Dude, there's so many good musicians.
I think his email is Eli Jazz. I think it is Eli Jazz at gmail.com.
Yeah, man.
Buenos Dias, pick up the full length album from my friend Nick Diaz. He's also got two EPs available: Love Balloon and Urbanized New Wave Texican. You can go to buenosdiasmusic.com, which takes you to the SoundCloud, right?
It's on that front page. It actually goes to the website, but the SoundCloud is there.
Okay.
As soon as you hit it.
Buenos Dias Music. Diaz with a D. I mean, with a Z.
And a D.
Yeah, of course a D. But Diaz with a Z. Is there anything I'm missing, bro?
No, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming on your stop off on the way to Dallas. Yeah, have a great gig tonight.
Thank you. This is a fun time. It's,
yeah.
Get to do things like this and go play shows. What's wrong with that?
No, that's what this whole thing's about.
That's what it's about.
Like, someone invites you to their place to talk about yourself? Like, fuck yeah, thanks, man. Really? Seriously?
You want me to talk about me?
Sure, okay. I'll stop off.
Sure, whatever. Let's do it.
Be good, Nick.
Cool, man. Tubas and
trumpets. Yeah, Nick Diaz. His band, Buenos Diaz. The self-titled album, which came out a little bit earlier this year, Buenos Diaz. You can find it at buenosdiazmusic.com. And of course, if you are living on the East Coast, he's on tour with Alejandro Escovedo until next week, July 1st. Okay, so go to buenosdiazmusic.com. Get involved with Nick. He's a great dude. I want to thank him for coming by. Great conversation. And I want to remind you while you're out there checking out Buenos Diaz stuff online, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and anywhere you find podcasts. Okay? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Hope you have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. I'm off this weekend from Skyrocket. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Let's enjoy some more music from Nick Diaz, his band Buenos Diaz, from the album Buenos Diaz. Here's the song, Move On. Have a great week. Let's get down.